Thetsos, Season 1, Episode 10. Written by Ryan Stinson and Rain Martin. Directed by Calliope Kesters.
With all due respect, Your Majesty, we cannot let these people suffer at the hands of an unjust reign.
Versus, I have explained it time and time again. We cannot simply barge into the capital, kill everyone there, and expect the war to just end at the drop of a hat. We have to work from the interior first, get the war to a point where we can manage it, and then look towards some form of negotiation from the capital.
Negotiation? Chancellor Harrison will not negotiate. He is a cold, heartless tyrant who wants nothing but fame and power. He won't give that up, even if it is painfully obvious he is lost.
Which only proves the point I'm trying to make here. We cannot just storm into the capital at the moment. It will not end well for anyone.
So what are we supposed to do? Sit back as more and more people suffer?
At the moment, it seems like all we can do.
This is insane. I do not understand how you are totally okay with these people dying in inhumane, treacherous conditions. The battlefields have never touched Forhan, but based on the state of things, you would have never been able to guess.
I apologize if my actions are not initially to help the citizens of Forhan, but seeing as I am the Prince of Pamantia, that is where my priority is.
Okay, now let's everyone calm down, let's take a few deep breaths, maybe a quick break, and then we can regroup and finalize a plan.
Carson, this is the third time we've had to do this. She glares over at the prince. It's clear we aren't getting anywhere.
Well, I, for one, need a break from all of this useless yelling, even if there have already been multiple.
I wouldn't call it useless, Pa'ami. I say this is helpful, knowing the different side of a war.
Which is quite obvious, given the fact that I've had to state my knowledge of the current state of Forhan approximately 7 times now.
And I have also had to tell you multiple times that your idea is too risky for it to work.
Enough! Both of you, enough. 10 minutes. Everyone, go calm down. Take a little breather. We'll come back and we'll all try and come back with a plan. Everyone nods and Negrin leaves the room to head to his bedroom. Recess also leaves to check on the Thetsos, who were sharing stories about their holders and catching up. This leaves Carson with Pa'ami, and he uses this time to try and get to know her. So, how long have you known Negrin?
Actually, we only just met earlier this morning. It's a long story of how exactly we met. My friend, who I didn't know was actually this creepy stalker person, said that they and Negrin were good friends, but then we got here and basically broke into his house. I mean, not really break in, per se. One of his servants or advisors or whatever let us in, but we could tell we weren't really welcome when creepy stalker friend burst into Negrin's room while he was sleeping, so yeah, a bit odd, but I guess it worked.
Cool. Yeah, that's a bit different. Recess and I have known each other for a while now. She saved my life, so I really owe a lot to her.
Oh, I gotcha. You like her because she saved your life, don't you?
What? No, I mean, maybe. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it before.
I might be totally wrong. I don't really get love. I mean, I like people as friends and such, but I just haven't ever felt love for someone, you know?
I don't really understand personally, but I get that. I mean, you don't have to romantically love someone in order to make an impact on their life.
Exactly! I'm sorry, I talk a lot, don't I? I think that might be some of the Jane rubbing off on me. They're the creepy stalker friend I mentioned earlier. I'm gonna stop talking. Sorry, I'm gonna check on Negrin. She heads towards Negrin's bedroom.
Oh, okay. See you later. Once she leaves the room, Carson leans against the wall, exhausted from the argument of earlier. He looks around as he stands alone in the bare conference room. He leans against a wall and stares out the window, waiting for the others to get back.
The Chancellor looks out the large window at the back of his office. The attack happened as scheduled last night, and confirmations of the legislators' deaths started rolling in. He looks out towards the smoke and rubble. As it begins to clear, he notices the change in his view. He's able to see the slight stretch of beach near the capital. He sees the sun cresting over the small ridge and the high buildings of the city. He despises it. The sun was only a nuisance, providing life over the earth and creating nauseating light when it shined through the glass panes every morning and night. Before, it was blocked by the legislation building, but now it is clearly visible, piercing through the smoke that rises above the aftermath of the previous night. Suddenly, a ringing pierces his brain. It gets louder and louder as he tries to suppress it. It had happened before, but it was far stronger this time. What have you done to me, Umbrano? It grows louder and louder, causing the Chancellor to place his hands over his ears. He focuses on the vast power of space filling his mind, and just as soon as the ringing started, it stopped. His mind reverts back to its normal state. Just to check, he generates a small sphere of dark energy, spinning it in his palm and tossing it back and forth. Satisfied, he makes it disappear and resumes watching the smoke rise over the buildings of Forhon. The mortal form of Farven Harrison does have its peculiarities. He is quite strong mentally, for a mortal, that is. This is only the second instance something of this nature has occurred, but it is nothing beyond the control of the winds. He turns away from the window as General McManus enters the room. More and more confirmations pop up on his computer screen. Excellent work, General. Now those pesky legislators won't be a thorn in my side.
Your press conference is ready for you, just as you ordered, sir.
Patience, General. Let us not gloss over this first in a long list of triumphs for us. Let us revel in this great victory. She does not move or respond. She simply stands there, almost looking dissatisfied. What's wrong, General? Are you not proud of your accomplishment?
I'm quite pleased, Chancellor. I simply await your next orders.
General, we've been over this. You are worth so much more than just following orders. You are a strong, powerful leader, are you not? Do you hear that? Do you hear how the winds swirl through the plaza? He is pleased with us. Everything is falling into place, and you are now one of his prized champions. We must keep up this good work. We must begin the extraction plan.
Sir, surely not now. Our armies have fallen back severely. We cannot engage at this point in time.
Still so focused on winning this war outright. I admire it, General, but you are far too focused on that. It distracts you from the important matters. This will help everything fall into place. Both the war and the Thetsos will be ours at last. He walks up and places a hand on her shoulder. Then we can rule together, have fame in his ever-present darkness. The strength in you is unmatched, General. I do not suspect it to be wavering now.
General McManus swallows to try and unblock the lump in her throat. It shall be done, my lord.
I know it will. You, however, will not be involved.
I beg your pardon, sir?
Your strength is needed here. There are others who can perform a simple extraction. You are far more than anything they need. He needs you to stand by my side as the new Vice Chancellor.
I don't know what to say.
Then say nothing. You will say a few words at this press conference. Nothing more, nothing less. Am I understood?
Yes, Chancellor. Thank you, Chancellor.
No, Vice-Chancellor. Thank you. Let us not waste any more of their time. They both step out of the office, heading towards the front steps of the mansion.
Though Metzi had little experience with the human species, she knew that a common occurrence amongst them was the feeling of confusion about how they have managed to end up in certain situations. She knew that Palmy had experienced it several times, mostly on account of Metzi's actions. from falling deeply into a cave and almost being killed by a panther, to wandering the woods for weeks until they reached the house of an old man who led them to the location of the second Thetsu, Balmy had been through a lot. And now, Metsu was feeling a similar confusion as she held both Thahu and Malo by the necks of their shirts to prevent them from killing each other and damaging the room they were in.
Let me at him!
How could you have anything against cats? They're magical creatures. You are despicable!
Both of you, enough! A wave of water emerges from Metsu's mortal form, knocking back both Thahu and Malo. They both hit the walls on opposite ends of the room. Malo runs around like a chicken lacking a head, trying to find something to get the water off of him as steam rises away from his body.
Is there a towel, an extra shirt lying somewhere, something to get this horrid water off my personage?
Sorry, guys. My temper flared a little there. Are you both all right?
I'm fine, Metsu.
Well, I'm not. I don't know if you knew this already, but fire and water don't exactly mix. Litsula hands him a towel, letting him dry off. Ah, thank you, Litsula. Instead of returning it to Litsula, however, he burns the towel, leaving a pile of ash on the floor. They have servants here. Someone will pick it up.
You know, out of all of us, I thought it was you who had the most respect for royalty.
And who's to say I don't? I didn't insult your little prince directly, did I? I just alluded to the fact that he has servants who can deal with the burnt towel.
Let's not lose track here, okay, guys? We know something is going on in Forhan, and we need to help out our holders. We have to decide what our next step should be in order to guide the humans in the right direction.
You do realize that the humans are in the other room discussing the exact same thing, right?
Yes.
And their answers might not actually match what we come up with.
I know.
So what happens if the two groups have different answers?
We convince them of ours, obviously. They haven't been alive for millions of years like we have been. They haven't seen enough to make a rationalized decision.
Believe me, I've seen plenty.
Besides, all I've heard from that room is arguing. They can't even agree on a plan themselves.
Now, so what are we supposed to do, charge into Forhan? That did wonderfully the last time we tried to escape from one of their government facilities.
It really didn't, though. I mean, I was asleep for the last half of it, but didn't you guys mention that someone got killed?
Anyway, what are we supposed to do? They know we exist. They've likely taken drastic defensive measures against us, and we don't know what's up with that Chancellor guy. We have no advantages other than the four of us, and last time that just went so well.
But you just said... Oh! I get it now. It's that sarcasm thing that humans do, right?
Yes, Litsula, it is.
Maybe we would have an advantage if you two hadn't gotten into the mess in the first place. And remind me, who exactly caused that again?
Don't.
Don't what? You've insulted my holder plenty of times. It's only fair that I insult yours at least once.
You don't know anything about him.
The same way you don't know anything about mine. So your point is...
Ah, yes, my point is you and your holder are both cowards, and my holder is not.
Your holder is not? So does that mean you are?
I will drown you both if you don't shut up! The room grows silent except for the faint sounds of Litsula humming.
Oh, sorry. I didn't realize this was supposed to be a dramatic moment.
Can you two stop bickering for 2 seconds so that we can get some sort of plan together?
Metsu, I don't know if you've noticed, but I don't think they can.
Well, he keeps starting it.
I do not!
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
Yes, you...
Malo gets splashed in the face, courtesy of Metsu. Keep arguing. This room is quite close to the ocean. Now, in order to determine what to do, we need to know more about what happened. So, what happened?
Well, I don't remember much, but what I do remember started when Verses broke her shoulder trying to get out of the jail cell, and I was supposed to do something, so I put some concrete in front of the door. Then I remember standing next to Verses, along with Carson, Malo, and... that one lady who died.
Okay, well then.
And then the guards broke through the concrete and started attacking us. But I threw spikes and dirt and lava at them, so everything was fine. At some point, we went to a corner with some air vent or something, and they said I needed to make a shield, and I sort of did, but it wasn't great. and then I tried to make a step up to the air vent, but that didn't go well. And then I blacked out and don't remember anything else.
What we do know is that the guards had several technological advantages over us, and now they've seen the capabilities of 2 out of 4 Thetsos. We couldn't do much against them, and every second we spend here only makes their armies grow stronger.
Yes, but how concentrated are they on the war?
We don't know. We couldn't get to the Chancellor to find out.
Thaho, does the Prince have any idea?
Not recently, no. His dad's kind of a jerk and won't involve him in any affairs. He hasn't even sent a letter Nagrin's way since he's been here.
Ha! This is great. Not only is your prince a coward, but he's not even a prince.
It isn't his fault.
You truly do have a bad time picking holders, Thaho. Every single time, you always seem to choose the weak one.
What do you mean?
You know exactly who I'm talking about.
You can't call him weak. He was one of the greatest knights of the time.
And yet, the only thing he was known for was perishing in a fiery death.
And whose fault is that?
What? It wasn't my fault.
Oh, sure. It was purely coincidental that your holder sent a flaming projectile directly at my holder.
At your holder's kingdom?
There was no one else there. It was a diplomatic mission.
So you say.
Metsy, do you want some popcorn? I think the show is about to start.
Sure, I'm done trying at this point. Lucilla scurries out of the room as Mallow and Thaho continue arguing.
And don't even get me started on that one time you bonded with a cat.
Well, what was I supposed to bond with? Cats were ferocious predators at the time, although they were still plenty cute.
And I'm sure you had the aspect of ferociousness in mind when you chose to bond with a cat.
Maybe. So what?
So what? Don't you get it, Thaho? All this time, you have had some of the greatest power of any of us, and yet you never use it. Why? Morals, ethics, right and wrong, shoulds and shouldn'ts, all useless features of this mortal world.
Thaho clenches his fist and tries to not let his anger get the best of him.
Every single holder you have had was not used to your fullest extent, and in the end, they all suffered. You don't want that, of course. It's why you don't use your powers. But nevertheless, it is still your fault just the same.
The houseplants in the corners of the rooms begin to rustle. The dirt moves and churns in the pots.
Litzel returns to the room with the popcorn and notices the pots. Hey, those weren't doing that before.
It just goes to show that you have no true care for your holders, no real sympathy. Even now, you grow close with this prince of yours. You know that will endanger him. You know that you are putting him at the forefront of a massacre that he does not even know exists.
Thaho tightens his fists, struggling to force down his anger.
Metsy? Litzela points towards the plants, and Metsy looks fearful.
Mallow, enough!
Admit it, Thaho. You've never cared. You have no sympathy, no moral urges. You're just like the rest of us, only you waste your time with this mortal nonsense. You cannot make the right decision to save your life. Your choices are nothing. Your morals are nothing. That prince is nothing. And you are nothing.
Enough! Thaho's voice gets deeper in a fit of rage. He shoots his hands towards Mallow. The vines from the plants collapse around Mallow, shoving him onto the wall and closing around his brother's throat.
Mallow gets slammed against the wall by the vines. He looks up towards Thaho and notices the deep green glow of his eyes. His face is mottled in rage and anger, and the glow grows brighter and brighter as his rage grows.
Thinking quickly, Litzela conjures a sharp shard of tile out from the floor. She begins to charge towards the vine and propels the shard through the vines. Mallow falls to the floor with a thump, and Thaho leans back against the wall, holding his head.
Mallow, are you okay?
Without saying a word, Mallow looks up at Metsy and dissipates.
I guess he's fine then. Thaho, are you okay?
Yeah, I think so. Is Mallow hurt?
He left, so I wouldn't know.
I don't know what happened. I haven't felt this way since... Well, I haven't felt this way in a very long time.
Are you sure that you're all right?
I'm fine. I need to take a breather. Thaho walks out of the room.
In all seriousness, I'm worried about them, Metsy.
I am too.
What are we going to do?
I don't know if we can do anything. We might have to let this one run its course.
But what if it doesn't? What if they keep fighting like this for thousands of years?
Then I guess we have to push through. I'm going to check on Pommy. Metsy dissipates, leaving Litsila alone in the room.
Litsila sits down in one of the chairs, exhausted. She moves the tile back into its place on the floor and hopes nobody notices. She thinks about all of the past fights between the two, and how much she and Metsy have had to deal with. In her many, many years witnessing the arguments, she had learned that the best course of action was to not interfere. But this was something else entirely. The glow of Thaho's eyes had only been replicated once before. She shakes the thought from her head. There's no way that he could be interfering with them. But maybe. It was the only other reasonable explanation. Litsila was the first one to arrive on Earth, so she was able to see the growth and arrival of everyone else. There was Metsy, who came crashing in on a meteor one day. She started out just as wild as Litsila, but eventually tamed and matured into the maternal figure she is today. Eventually, Thaho appeared and brought life to the planet. After several periods of evolution, man created fire, thus creating Malo. But before either of them arrived, there was another Thetso. Upepo was the Thetso of Wind. He was brought onto Earth shortly after Metsy's arrival. He was a frightened Thetso child. He was very erratic and spontaneous like the rest of them. Metsy seemed to know something about him was different. He seemed to almost be intimidated by the other two. So Metsy took him under her wing. She nurtured him, and eventually the winds calmed over the Earth. Once Thaho arrived, the initial reaction from Upepo was jealousy. But eventually, he became a true older brother to Thaho, a mentor of sorts. When Malo came along, he didn't want anything to do with Upepo. Malo and Thaho eventually became the brothers of the group, and with Metsy constantly preventing their mischief, Upepo began to feel more and more left out. Upepo spent many nights looking at the stars, staying on the uppermost levels of the atmosphere. The stars fascinated him even from an early age, but as he began to feel like an outcast, he found a new, calming sense in the ever-present void of space. He never knew that the calming sense he was feeling was that of space slowly consuming him. One day, he sought to reach beyond the limits of his atmosphere. Metsy was the only one who could possibly stop him, and she tried. But it was already done. The darkness consumed his entire form, and the winds began to grow violent again. He left the rest of the group and began to wreak havoc on the Earth. When Upepo took his first mortal form after the transformation, Metsy was the only one who saw him. He bonded to a panther. She noticed the main difference of how he did not take a separate form, but rather consumed the existing form of the mortal creature. Just as the darkness had consumed him, he consumed and controlled those who he bonded to. Eventually, the darkness controlled him more and more, turning him into his new form. Umbrano. The other Thetsos hadn't seen him in centuries. They didn't know if he would ever show up again. Litsila herself even thought he was dead. But Metsy had been feeling odd lately. She feels like he is rising again, being brought to power in another attempt to rule the Earth. She just hopes that they can control him before it is too late. For the first time in her life, Litsila is scared. About Umbrano, about Thaho and Malo, about how the fate of the world rests in their hands. It is a lot. She is determined, however, not to let it get to her just yet. She dissipates, and the room is left empty.
Nigrin flops onto the bed. It's been a long day. What with being abruptly woken by Jane, then finding Pommy and Metsy, and then meeting with Versace and Carson. Pommy seems to be nice, although she doesn't really talk that much in a group setting. She hasn't gotten onto his nerves like Versess has. Versess is constantly arguing with Nigrin because, of course, he's never right because he's from Pamantia. She wants to attack the government head-on, but he doesn't think that's a good idea. Of course, she doesn't have many ideas as to what they should do, but storming the capital will only result in the death of all of them. If all of them are dead, they can't do anything about stopping the war. But doing nothing won't stop the war either. He can't think of what to do. Then Pa'ami walks in.
Hey, I just came in here to check on you. How are you doing? It's getting pretty rough out there. Pa'ami sits on the bed beside him and awkwardly pats him on the back.
Nigrin sits up and hesitates. I'm all right, thank you. Pa'ami, is there something I could talk to you about? It might get kind of awkward.
I mean, sure, I guess. She looks at him confused. What is it?
I appreciate your advances, but I can't reciprocate them.
Nigrin, wait.
Please, just let me finish. We can't be together. I'm sorry, Pa'ami. It's not because of you, I swear. It's just, I swing the other way. Noting her confusion, Nigrin continues to try and explain. I stand on the other foot. I play for the other team. I'm a linebacker, not a quarterback. Pa'ami is still trying to figure out what he's saying, so he continues. I sail for the other island. I prefer pineapple on my pizza, not pepperoni. I like yaks, not oxen. I like boxers, not briefs. Pa'ami still looks confused, so Nigrin desperately tries one more time. I'm a waffle person, not pancakes.
Nigrin, wait. What are you trying to say?
I'm gay, Pa'ami. I'm sorry if I've hurt you, if this puts a damper on our relationship. I'm sorry.
No. You don't understand. I'm not attracted to you, Nigrin. It's all right. I really don't feel any attraction, to be honest. I believe the term for it is aromantic, so I'm not interested in you, Nigrin. We can still be friends.
Nigrin looks surprised for a moment. Well, that's not exactly how I planned this conversation to go. All right, do you want to talk about it?
Well, I guess I could. It's basically just that I don't feel any kind of romantic attraction to anyone, not even anyone as royal as a prince. She nudges his arm and smiles. So, you're gay. Do you have a crush on anyone?
Nigrin blushes and shakes his head. No, not really. It's just a little thing.
That blush tells me it's more than a little thing. But, all right. Anyways, things are changing so fast. How are you holding up through all of it? It's been quite a lot for me.
I've been handling it okay, I guess. Me and my dad used to fight a lot. I used to take out a lot of stress that way. I guess meeting up with you all has helped a bit, although Versess isn't helping any. How about you?
I'm holding up. It's all been moving very fast. Although, Metsi and I were in the woods for a really long time. We moved pretty slow then.
Oh, I had a car take me to the woods. It only took a day from the palace.
I have no idea how long we were in the woods, but it was actually a pretty good time usually. Although, sometimes Metsi would try to help and slap me with water or something.
Oh man, Metsi seems pretty nice, even if she's not particularly helpful. You know, most of the Thetsos are at each other's throats. For some reason, Thahu and Malo just can't get along. I think the other one is cheering them on. Is it Litsilta? Is that her name?
I think that's close, at least. I assume Metsi is the one stopping them from killing each other.
Yeah, she probably is. She seems to be about the only sensible one out of the bunch.
Well, anyways, I ought to get going. Everyone else was pretty riled up back there. I figured I'd go and see how they're doing. She smiles at him one more time before leaving the room.
Thahu appears next to Nigrin once Pa'ami leaves. I really like her. She handled that situation very well.
Nigrin moves away from him. Were you spying on me? You know how I feel about that.
Thahu frowns. I can read minds. Sometimes it just happens and I can't help it.
Well, I guess that makes sense. But that conversation was pretty much a disaster at the beginning. How are things going with the other Thetsus?
Malo isn't dead yet, so it's at least a start. Litsilla isn't helping any, but Metsi is really the reason Malo isn't dead. She keeps telling us we need to get over ourselves. It's really hard, though. Marlo just keeps getting on my nerves with his whole superiority complex.
That's what we figured. It's not going very well on my end. It's mostly me and Versace fighting over what to do. We haven't come to any kind of conclusions. It's all just a big disaster.
Yes. Disaster is a word to describe both of our situations. Anyway, you can do it. I've seen the arguments you've had with your father. You can handle Versace. You know, I used to hear the guards place bets on how fast you and your father would get into an argument.
Wait, really? That doesn't surprise me at all, actually. He laughs, and Tahoe laughs with him.
You can do it. I believe in you. He looks into Grin's eyes. They're both smiling, content to be in each other's presence. Go get him, dummy.
Nguyen starts out of the room, then turns around to wave at Tahoe one last time.
Versace slumps back into her chair in the main room. The only other person there is Carson, who hasn't spoken for the entirety of the meeting other than breaking up Versace and Nguyen when they were on the brink of killing each other. He just sits quietly in a seat at the side of the table. She finds it odd. Carson is seemingly always the one with a plan. Sometimes those plans are dumb, but other times, those plans save their lives. She had gotten into the role of being the executioner, making sure those plans went accordingly and as smoothly as possible. It has been so long since she has had to formulate a plan for herself. It was tiring, to say the least. She has been exhausted since Nguyen had first opened his mouth. It gives her much more of an appreciation for Carson. She never truly realized how smart he was, for a dumbass. It's soothing for her to not have to do everything on her own, for once in her life.
All right, everyone, let's get back to business. Nguyen enters the room and Paomi follows close behind him.
Versace straightens up in her chair, preparing for another battle in the war between her and Nguyen. The only positive thing she can say about Nguyen is that she admires how protective and passionate he is about his country. It is something no Forhanian chancellor has ever exemplified. But those ideas often presented clashing, hypocritical views of what should be done in the war. She doesn't exactly know why, but she also does not want to question him about it. That would only lead to more controversy between the two of them.
Nguyen sits down at the head of the table and straightens his tie and coat. So, after giving this topic some deep thought, I have come to the conclusion that while, yes, the Forhan government needs to be dismantled and faced head-on, we are not in a position to give a direct attack at the moment.
So, you're saying that the thought you gave towards the topic was worthless, since you came out with the same idea?
Nguyen calmly raised his hand to get Versace to stop speaking. She looks mildly offended by the gesture, but she leans back in her chair and stops. I agree that what the four of us have is powerful, but I'm not sure how powerful it is exactly. We don't know if Forhan can stop it.
Versace fights the urge to interject, letting Nguyen finish his thought.
The smarter move at the moment is to focus our efforts on the war front. If we push Forhan back to even farther than we already have, we stand a greater chance of victory when the time comes to face them head-on. So far, Pamantia's armies have managed to secure our entire southern and eastern coast, along with portions of our western coast and northern border. If we work to gain all four borders, we can fortify our border with Forhan and push inwards to have a large portion of Forhan's armies to surrender. Once we secure that, the government will either recede from the war or we will force them to. I know this choice isn't easy to deal with right now, but we have to play it smart. War is a long game, and we have to view it as such. We cannot barge in and expect to win, especially with Forhan. The room remains silent for a while after Nguyen finishes speaking. Versace seems to be lost in thought when Paomi interjects.
If anyone wants my opinion, I agree that we can't just ram ourselves into the government. Especially now that the Chancellor has control over all aspects of the government. It's too dangerous, and we need to play it smart.
Throughout the meeting, Jane has been eating popcorn and leaning against the wall in the corner, miraculously not saying a word until now. I also agree. Not that it matters, since I'm not a superhero or whatever.
After nearly having a heart attack, Nguyen whips around and faces Jane. Jane, what the heck? How long have you been here?
since the jail, you guys were all very deep in conversation, so I didn't want to interrupt anything. Oh, wait, I did just interrupt, didn't I? Whoops, sorry about that. I'll just lean here and finish this popcorn, which is really good, by the way. I don't know what brand it is, but the cool rock lady spirit thing in the other room gave it to me. She said not to tell Verses, though. Which one is Verses?
Verses raises her hand for a moment, and then proceeds to bury her face into her hands, ashamed on account of Litzilla's stupidity.
Cool. Just pretend you didn't hear anything, then. They lean back into the corner and throw a kernel of popcorn into the air. It misses their entire head by a good foot and bounces off the table before hitting the floor. Jane eats it anyway.
Anyways, thank you to both of you. Any input is greatly appreciated. He looks over at Verses, who still hasn't said anything. Carson also hasn't said anything the whole meeting, but Negrin just assumes that's normal for him.
Verses looks over at Carson, who's staring out the window. Carson?
Carson spins his chair towards Verses.
What do you think?
All of the eyes in the room are now on him. Me? Why does it matter what I think?
Because you're like us, Carson.
But I'm not special, you know? I'm nowhere near a prince, I'm not super smart, and I'm not this amazing warrior. I'm nothing. I'm just an average guy. I somehow feel like all of this happening to me was this supreme accident. Most days, I still pinch myself thinking I'll wake up on the streets of Forhan, starving and begging for anything to be thrown my way. There's nothing special about me, just about my Thetso, so why does it matter what I think?
Negrin starts to talk, but this time it's Verses' turn to cut him off.
Carson, in the time I've known you, you've said a lot of really, really dumb things. But this, what you just said is probably the dumbest thing I've ever heard you say. You, not Malo or Litzilla or me, are the one who got us out of that Forhan prison. You are the reason I'm alive right now. You said you aren't like anyone else. But just like I saved your life in that old, abandoned warehouse, you've saved mine in a top-notch government prison. If anything, that alone beats anything I've done. You are the bravest person I've met. And hey, it's the regular guy that keeps this group centered.
Agreed. If it weren't for you, Verses and I would be going for each other's necks right now. You're the only one who stepped up and stopped it.
Carson looks over at Verses. She is smiling. Genuinely smiling. He has never seen her do that before. Her eyes are wide and glimmering. Carson feels warmth running through his body for the first time in a while. He has spent so much time reminiscing on his bad past, his father, his mother kicking him out, that he had nearly forgotten his good past. Carson remembers way back to his first year of school. His dad dropped him off at the building, and Carson ran inside, hopeful of what this new experience would hold. He had trouble making friends, and it was a long, sad day of realizations for a 5-year-old. His dad realized it by the end of the first week. So he took him out to a nearby lake. He remembers sitting on the roof of his car, staring out at the calm, flat surfaces of the water. Then, a fishing boat sped through, causing wake and ripples in the water. His dad explained to him how the lake was similar to life itself. There were great big moments that dragged through you like boats. Just as the boat changed the surface of the water, those moments changed your life, whether it be for better or for worse. But eventually, the surface of the water would calm, and life would be smooth again. He told Carson that in order to have a fulfilling life, you have to focus on not drowning under the waves. After a moment, Carson comes back to reality, and he sits up in his chair. Personally, and I know it isn't what certain people want to hear, I agree with Negrin. When we escaped that prison, it wasn't without a cost. We lost someone, an ally, within that final fire. Her last deed was helping us escape, and I don't want that to be in vain. I'm worried that even with all four of us, something will happen to one of us, and I can't bear to let any of you go. I've had too much loss in my life. Carson looks at Verses and tries to catch her eye. I don't want to drag any of you along with me.
Verses glances down at the floor and places her hand on Carson's. Carson takes note, and finally their eyes meet. After a moment of looking in her eyes, he finally gives her a smile and clasps his hand into hers.
Thank you for that, Carson. Know that from henceforth, your opinion is always welcome.
Henceforth, huh? This guy really is a prince.
Verses, what are your thoughts?
I don't like how we're leaving the entire country behind, but I agree that it isn't safe to pursue. So, I agree on two conditions.
Which are?
First, as soon as we secure Pamantia, we begin our plans to march on Forhon.
If the country has not surrendered to us by then, I agree.
Believe me, they won't surrender. Second, if we manage to capture any Forhon soldiers, I don't want them imprisoned. Most of them were placed in this war by force and don't agree with the Chancellor. Mutinies have erupted within certain legions far before the incident with the legislation building. I can't imagine how many have happened now. I just ask that you give them another chance, and I ask for their second chance to not start imprisoned.
If there are any hostiles, there isn't much of a choice beyond prison. But if they are willing to pledge their peaceful allegiance to Pamantia, then maybe we can figure something out.
Thank you, Nagrin. You won't regret this.
I put the safety of my country before anything else. I just hope their hatred for the Chancellor is true and not some scheme to bring in spies. I better not regret this, Versace.
I assure you, it isn't a scheme. However, I do see your concern.
So, what now?
Based off the last report I was sent, the Western Front has been losing the most ground. I suggest we start there and then move to secure our northern border. Those who are in the room nod in agreement. Very good. Pack your things. We leave early tomorrow.
Before anyone can leave, the door slams open and Jisei enters the room, panting. Sire, urgent news from the palace, sire.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Calm down, Pajise. What's so urgent?
I would calm down, Nagrin, but you need to know this news immediately, and in private I will not share it in front of these children.
Pajise, it's fine. Just please tell me what's going on.
It never ends with you, does it?
Pajise, now.
A report came in from palace security this morning. There was a mild disturbance that was waived by the internal security station.
That's what's so important.
Let me finish. This afternoon, an exterior patrol officer noticed that one of the windows in your parents' bedroom was busted. A team was sent to investigate it around 3:30.
Pajise, what is happening?
Your parents are missing.
Missing? Or dead?
Not dead. All that was found was a folded letter on the bed.
So where are they?
They're in Forhon, Your Majesty. The note was hand-signed at the bottom by Chancellor Farvon Harrison.
Nagrin slumps back in his chair, his head swirled with a mix of different emotions. Get me the note. Immediately.
Right away, Your Highness. Pajise sprints out the door.
Nagrin looks around the room. Everyone looks the same way he is, confused as to how they should feel about the current situation. Excuse me for a moment. With that, Prince Nagrin rises from his chair, walks into his bedroom, and slams the door shut behind him.
Journey of Thetsos, Season 1, Episode 10. Written by Ryan Stinson and Rain Martin. Directed by Calliope Kesters. Edited by Calliope Kesters. Ryan Stinson is the creator of Journey of Thetsos. Production staff on Journey of Thetsos includes Executive Producer, Head Writer, and Creative Lead, Ryan Stinson. Lead Director, Cast Manager, and Script Editor, Calliope Kesters. Music and Effects Manager, Lead Composer, and Art Director, Natalie C. And Associate Director, Writer, and Composer, Rain Martin. Cast in Order of Appearance. The cast of Episode 10 in Order of Appearance includes Ashley Suklal as Versace, Jackson Tinsley as Nagrin, Hunter Dobbs as Carson, Calliope Kesters as Paami, Ryan Stinson as Chancellor Harrison, Ansley Wilson as General McManus, Natalie C. as Metzi, Mr. H.C. as Malo, William Wagner III as Thaho, Ansley Wilson as Litsilla, Olivia Sexton as Jane, and Mr. H.C. as Pajise. Writing staff includes Ryan Stinson, Calliope Kesters, and Rain Martin. Composition staff includes Natalie C., Rain Martin, Ryan Stinson, Harrison Clark, and Rebecca Collins. Editing staff includes Ryan Stinson, Calliope Kesters, and Mr. H.C. Main theme and logo by Ryan Stinson. Special thanks to Starwinkle Joe for his assistance during this process. Always remember roast beef. Want to learn more about Journey of Thetsos? Follow our social media platforms. Instagram, we are at @official_JOT_podcast. On Twitter, we are at @podcast_JOT. On TikTok, we are at @JOTpodcast. Also, find our Discord server and YouTube channel at the links in the description in this episode or the links in any of our social media bios. Journey of Thetsos is a production of Walk Run Jump Productions. Do not duplicate or directly republish any audio without the explicit consent of Walk Run Jump Productions. Copyright 2021, all rights reserved.